Hello and welcome into Time Out with Taylor Brooks, now on the SNY.TV audio network. Today's guest is Philadelphia Eagles captain Malcolm Jenkins. He's fresh off winning the Lombardi, but also fresh off a season full of activism and a journey towards social change. You know, I've always felt that I had a good understanding of the protests and the message and the way the message was skewed, where the protest went right and where the protest went wrong. But after speaking to Malcolm, my perspective really did change, and I think that yours may too. He walks me through his decision to protest, what it was like in locker rooms across the NFL, Colin Kaepernick as a catalyst, and the next steps in the fight. We also discuss the movie Black Panther, trash-talking Tom Brady, and being a good representation of black love. So lots to unpack in this episode. Be sure to subscribe to Time Out with Taylor Rooks on iTunes and SoundCloud by searching Time Out with Taylor Rooks. But for now, here's Malcolm Jenkins.
Alrighty, Malcolm Jenkins, Super Bowl champ with the Eagles now.
Yep.
How does it feel?
Feels good. I mean, this year so much went on, you know, with our team that this was really a special year. You know, the guys we have in the locker room, the injuries we had, just the city not having a championship, you know, ever. So being able to kind of just fight through all of that, continue to believe, continue to, you know, fight for each other, but to have fun the way we did, to me, was really what made this year special. And I was just, you know, happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, and it really seemed just like a storybook. Like, yeah. It was the best story
right. In
the NFL. The entire world was rooting for you guys, unless you were a Patriots fan.
Right, yeah.
So it was all the dominoes really just kind of fell into place, and it was just good to see you guys win that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things fell in place for us to do it. And I think that's, as we went, you know, it gave us more and more confidence. We believed in ourselves. It, you know, even our matchups in the playoffs, we felt like were in our favor, and for us to, you know, be have
whoa,
a backup
quarterback.
Whoa,
I'm a Falcons fan.
Hey, I mean,
whoa,
this,
in your face.
This is no, you know, this is no shot against anybody, but you know, we liked our matchups,
yeah.
You know, and they worked out for us, and it, being able to be at home, you know, we got a backup quarterback who's really not a backup, but mm-hmm. You know, we needed everything to be in our favor, and it was, and man, I was just proud to be out there.
But that is the thing. Obviously, as a Falcons fan, I'm almost scarred by the Super Bowl. But when I was watching, you cannot think that it is over when you're playing Tom Brady.
Oh, no.
You really can't. I learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah.
But in what moment did you say, okay, this is it, we're winning? Was it really not until the clock was at zero?
Yeah, well, we believed we were going to win
the
whole game. But it was, you know, you got to go out and do it. And mm-hmm. So... that guard didn't come down until that ball hit the ground at the end, because you already understand what kind of game there it is. You know who he is as a player and what he can do. And I've played Tom plenty of times, and if you leave time on the clock, it gets dicey at the end of the game.
And even then, after the clock's done, I'm still not sure.
Yeah. If you watch the tape, it's like the ball hit the ground, and then like everybody kind of paused for a second, like... let me check at the clock. No time. Okay. Yeah, I guess we won.
Yeah. But, it really feels like that.
It was fun, man.
But it was great to see you trash talk Tom Brady. And it was all in good fun. But you never see players really do that with Tom Brady.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he went to Michigan. I went to Ohio State. So, and I got a lot of respect for him. So, for me, it's, you know, that was one of those things where we weren't going to let the facade and mystique of the New England Patriots, you know, get us out of our games. We talked trash all year. Mm-hmm. And that was going to change because we were playing, you know, who I think is arguably the greatest quarterback to ever play this game. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we're out there, you know, afraid of him.
Yeah, for sure. And so, okay, the parade obviously was a big insane shenanigan. It was great. What was the best part of the parade that we don't know about? And you can't use you almost dropping the trophy.
That was not the best part of the I'm trying to erase that memory. That trophy would have just went tumbling down the rocky steps.
That would
have been bad. My favorite part of the parade was, you know, we're on the bus and we're driving as fans everywhere, and we look over and Jason Kelce is not, like, there were some guys, we were running like on the streets behind the barriers, but he's in the crowd, like crowd surfing, like it's a
like he's literally he was the laying. Star of the parade.
He's laying in the crowd, and they're passing him along the parade route randomly. You're like, okay, that was by far my favorite memory. When you knew like guys are, we are feeling this just like the city is, and it was a unique connection right there.
Yeah, is there a moment in the game that always sticks out to you?
I mean, it was a lot of them, to be honest. Defensively, I remember we had some stops early, but then got to the point where they were rolling, and the biggest thing, we're like, look, we know this. Our offense is going to do our thing. We just need to get one stop. We don't care when it is, just get one stop. And after every drive, they were coming back. They score, we come back, like, doesn't matter, just get one. And then to get that one at the end, Brandon Graham gets the sack fumble. We like, see, they're, you know, and it was one of those things where, like, nobody ever flinched, nobody ever doubted, which is what people do when they play the Patriots. They start second-guessing
themselves.
You're
the wolf a little bit,
right. Especially when they took the lead late in the game. You know, for us, we just say, okay, we know our offense is doing their thing. They're going to score. We just need one stop. And, this whole year has been kind of like that, where guys have just believed. And through that belief, somehow we just make it work.
Yeah. Now, how much of football is, like, getting over your opponent? Because I don't think people are able to always do that with the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, the entire game is about situations. And that's what makes, to me, that's what makes the Patriots such a great team, is they're always prepared. And when the situations come, they know what to do. They're not worried about who their opponent is. And I think that's one of the things that we've taken on as a team is just being aware of the situation and figuring out how to win in those situations. And so we didn't care who we were going to play. You know, we're going to find a way to win that game. And some guys, sometimes that might mean certain guys stepping up. Whoever's got the best matchup needs to win. Some guys might have tough matchups that we need to, you know, step up. But we're going to find a way to get it done.
Now, one moment in that game that obviously had Twitter going crazy, of course, was your hit on Brandon. Obviously completely legal, just a brutal hit. At what point do you kind of say, okay, this may have been really hard? Like, when in your head do you kind of think about the hit that's coming? Is it not till after?
I mean, you know, I'm running and I'm like, okay, he doesn't see me. Maybe he's going to turn and I'm like, oh no, he's not going to see me. So,
which is not your fault
at all. Yeah, that's not my fault. Yeah. It's like 10 times out of 10, I'm going to hit him the same exact way. But, you know, you kind of know immediately after, like, okay, he's hurt. Like, I'm not going to celebrate over him. I'm going to walk away. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, in the Super Bowl, with everything on the line, that's going to happen 10 times out of 10.
For sure. And, I mean, we see it all the time in the NFL. I just always wonder, as a player, like, do you have conversations with that person later? Do you talk about how you just move on?
I didn't reach out to him personally, but he knows a couple guys on the team. And he sent a message through them just saying, like, hey, it was a clean hit, man. You know,
for sure.
I got a lot of respect for the way you played the game. You know, congratulations on the win. And he was in New Orleans. I played against him a couple times. Got a lot of respect for, you know, for him as a player. So I'm glad there wasn't no ill feelings.
No bad blood. No beef here. But no, honestly, and I think that most people believe this, the most amazing part of this year for you guys, at least for me, has been the social activism and just how this team has come together and you've been able to use your voice. And I feel like for you, and correct me if I'm wrong, it almost seems like this year was kind of an evolution in a way. You were really able to use, you know, your platform and speak about things that mattered. Where did that come from for you?
For me, I've been able to see the difference that people have made in my life, like whether it be coaches, playing under Jim Tressel, playing under my high school coach, being able to be mentored by other people and what just somebody looking out for you or speaking up for you, what that means. And so for me, I've always been pushed in positions of leadership. I've been a captain on every team I've ever played on. I'm the oldest of three boys. So that role of always looking out for those behind me is just kind of instilled in me. And so once I kind of started to recognize how much leverage we have as athletes to use our platform to draw attention to whatever it is we want, I kind of felt responsible to do that and to do it in a meaningful way, not just, you know, tweeting or whatever, using my social media or just talking about it, but actually showing up, you know, being available. Walking into some rooms that might be a little uncomfortable for me, but because I have so much leverage, you know, we get access to talk to politicians, talk to the police department, to talk to community leaders. So with that access comes responsibility.
And that is one thing you do. You're always out of the community. I saw you did the ride with the police. Mm-hmm. But when it came to the protesting, When did you say, you know what, I'm going to do something on the field? When did you know that that is, was the next step for you?
Well, the first time it happened, obviously, in 2016, Colin sat down, to which he changed his posture to taking a knee. That was all in the preseason. And I remember preseason, going into the preseason number four, the last week of preseason, we had a conversation in a team meeting just about, you know, what guys thought about it. And there was a rookie named Mike Tavares who was vocally said he was going to take a knee. And I realized, like, that for him, an undrafted rookie who's, you know, trying to make the team, that's a dangerous position to put yourself in. And I realized that, there was a huge need for guys to do something coordinated and to be together, because it's easy for people to get isolated. And we saw what they did to Colin Kaepernick, how immediately they isolated him, changed his narrative. And so we started to get guys around the league on a group chat. We had about 60 guys just talking about, okay, how do we do something together so that not one guy is getting, you know, cherry-picked out of the group? How do we keep the same messaging? How do we stay on topic? And that kind of went over the next couple weeks. But I knew, you know, at that time we stood up in the meeting that, okay, this isn't just Colin and, you know, San Fran or a couple other guys. Like, this is happening in every locker room. And we got to figure out a way to organize that in order to be most effective.
And kind of in that group chat, what were some of the things you guys discussed as far as, this is what my locker room is saying and this is what I think about it, maybe we should approach it like this or shouldn't approach it like this? What were those discussions?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of different opinions. You know, most guys wanted to take whatever we had discussed kind of as leaders back to their locker room and discuss it as a locker room. But there were discussions that, you know, should we all take a knee? Some guys weren't comfortable with taking a knee. It's like, so is there another way to go about it? Was it raising a fist? Was it not doing anything at all? And there's a lot of things being thrown out and weighed. And at the end of the day, a lot of guys are like, hey, well, I got to take this back to my locker room. And I think everybody was having these player-only conversations, which is good because, you know, guys are engaging. But at the end of the day, you still had, you know, everybody's messaging was pretty much the same, but you had pockets of different things. So some guys taking a knee, some raising a fist, some locking arms, some, you know, choosing not to do anything. But that was 2016. It was like a shock to everybody.
Yeah, it was very new.
Yeah, and I think what you saw in 2017 was guys start to figure out how to take it to the next step while also trying to use their voice and stay in solidarity.
How frustrating was it for the narrative to keep changing and keep going away from what you guys were trying to get across?
Yeah. I think, you know, to be honest, I think a lot of that is our fault. You know, I think as players, we spent too much energy talking about things that really didn't matter. You know, so people started to talk about athletes, you know, just shut up and play your sport, or why are you talking about this? Is kneeling or doing anything during the anthem right or wrong? When that's not what we're trying to talk about. We're trying to talk about police brutality, criminal justice, you know, disenfranchised communities. That's what we want to talk about, but we wasted our own time trying to defend our right to even speak up. And so we're talking about athletes, you know, and their right to speak, when that's something that you don't need to argue about. We're all taxpaying citizens, and we have that right to, one, to vote, and then hold whoever we vote accountable. And just like anybody else, we're entitled to that opinion. So arguing that was wasting time. And oftentimes that allowed the narrative to go. And we tried to steer back as much as we could. But, you know, I think we did waste some time there.
I didn't really think about it in that way. That even though you were talking about things that surrounded the issue, you weren't necessarily talking about the issues that you were protesting.
Right.
Because it did kind of spiral in a way. You know, everybody is like, you know, they're kneeling. Should they be able to do that? Are they disrespecting the anthem? But we weren't saying, okay, they're doing it because brutality and this is why and this is a case. But I guess in a way was kind of what happened.
Yeah. And so it's like,
but to me, it seemed like all that was wrapped up in it.
No,
but I guess, you know, it kind of was separate in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely separate. Like, you know, I never raised my fist to say that, yeah, athletes have a chance. We deserve to use our voices.
Yeah. That was like, not clearly the issue. We have that.
Right. So so me arguing that is really wasting time and allowing them to steer this conversation into somewhere we don't want to take it. It was never about the military. Colin Kaepernick sat originally, and because he talked to
a member of the military,
right, he changed his posture to taking a knee after being suggested to him. So it was never about the military. So for us to even debate on it, like, the media can do whatever they want. They can debate that. But as players, there's no need for us to defend things like that. And so, you know, oftentimes I just try to stick to the script and just talk about the issues, bring those up. Anybody who wants to talk about that, great. But I'm not going to debate with you whether my posture or decision to demonstrate is right or wrong, because it's irrelevant if we don't want to talk about the reasoning behind it.
And there was a point where you saw these different groups where some people thought what you were doing was right or wrong, what Colin was doing was right or wrong. But I think that right now we always try to put people into boxes. One person's right, one person is wrong, but really everybody can be right in a way. For example, football player isn't kneeling. Does that mean he doesn't want equality?
Right.
You know, that's not what that means, but we like to say this person is doing it the way it should be done, and this person is doing it the way it should not be done.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of pits everybody against one another.
Yeah, and we tried as much as we could to dispel any of those notions that just because I'm raising a fist doesn't mean that I feel like what Colin is doing is wrong. And I didn't like people trying to use us in that manner to discredit somebody else when in all actuality, Colin Kaepernick, you know, if he didn't do what he did, wouldn't have started this, you know, entire movement. I feel like everybody has their role in it. Obviously, Colin was the catalyst of it all. You had other guys that, because of that, like even myself, got more active and started to realize the influence we had. And went about it, you know, in a different manner. But we're all trying to do the same thing. And when you listen to us talk, we're all talking about marginalized communities. We're talking about people of color, police brutality, our criminal justice system, and mass incarceration. Like, all of these things are encompassed in what we're talking about. And so our paths to get there doesn't matter. It doesn't make you right or wrong. We're all trying to accomplish the same thing.
What do you think was maybe, besides what the things you guys could have done better as you feel, what was the biggest misconception about the protests?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that people thought that the protests were all we were doing. And so we were so caught up in this dialogue about the actual demonstration that we never got to actually talk about what guys were actively doing in the community. The fact that on multiple occasions, you know, myself and other players were up in D.C. on Capitol Hill talking to legislators about the reforms that we wanted to see. That guys were in their communities doing ride-alongs with the police, not trying to isolate the police, but trying to get an understanding as to their training, their struggles and challenges to do their jobs. That guys were in the community and already have foundations that deal with education and giving scholarships to youth. And so there's already been this holistic approach, but the demonstrations in themselves is what kind of amplified everybody's messages so that people can actually look at us and put microphones in front of our faces so that we can speak on these. Because, to be honest, guys have been doing this work long before the protests.
So, yeah.
But nobody paid attention then. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why the demonstrations were very, very effective.
So do you feel like the protests succeeded?
I think so. I mean, if you were to ask me, you know, before I raised my fist, like, hey, if you raise your fist, you be able to, one, organize, you know, over 60 former and current NFL players to be a part of a group that is collectively trying to push for legislative changes, push for educational advancement, economical advancement, police accountability. Like, that in itself, I would have stopped. But then you add on, you know, the league pushing this initiative, you know, to highlight those issues, similar to what they've done for breast cancer awareness and Salute to Service. So having that platform, as well as committing to $89 million over 7 years, I feel like I feel like that is a successful demonstration. Obviously, still a lot of things to do, but for that to be our base and our foundation, I think that nothing like that has been done before from athletes especially. So I was definitely proud to be a part of that. I was proud of my peers and everybody who took a part of that.
Now, one thing that is, I think, incredibly apparent about you is you know what you want, you know what you believe, and you have a very, you know, strong conviction in yourself and those things that you believe. So when that happened and there was some backlash, how did that make you feel?
Well, I think, you know, at any point in time, when things get done, there's always going to be an initial reaction, whether good or bad. And only time really, you know, it tells kind of the truth and the value of what you're doing. So a lot of what we're doing right now is just sowing seeds. And we understand that this is not the harvest right now.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you're not in it for praise. You're not in it for accolades or recognition. You're just in it for the work. And I think for me, as long as I keep, you know, the people and the lives that I'm trying to assist and help at the forefront of every decision that I make, then I sleep easy, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not by myself. Like I said, I got a lot of guys, and I try to include as many people as possible to make sure that I'm doing this the right way. And we got a lot of experts and partners that we're working with to guide us and kind of help us navigate these, you know, these are new areas for a lot of us. But the more and more we learn, the more we see a significant space for us to have impact, more so than a lot of the people who do this on a daily basis, just because of the doors that are open for us.
What is it like for you to go out into the communities and see maybe, you know, like these little boys and girls seeing you, and they're probably like, Malcolm Jenkins is right here. I mean, what is that like for you, and has there ever been a moment that you really realized this representation is so important?
I see it all the time. I have my own foundation, and I'm in the community a lot. But for me, when I see the influence of, like, athletes, it's not even me. Like, I'll go to my little cousin for, like, 2 years had his hair just like Odell Beckham. And I see how he's looking up, not even necessarily to me, but, like, to all of these, like, different athletes. And that's kind of the reminder to me that, like, everything that you do is sending a message and an example. And that includes what you don't do. And so a lot of the times when things are happening around the world, around the country, in your neighborhood, your community, and you don't act, that example is also being replicated. And so you'll see another generation of kids that accept the status quo, that don't push back, that don't necessarily know their worth, that don't put themselves out there. And so I think it's our responsibility as well to kind of break that trend and make sure that we are setting a good example of how to you know, fight for what is right, to not accept anything less. And you know, it's one of those things that we're not perfect, you know, but we're trying to do it as best we can.
Yeah, because not only will kids do the things you do, they'll also care about the things that you care about. So if they see you caring about the right things, they're going to adopt those sentiments as well. And that's kind of one of the reasons why the whole shut up and dribble thing really bothered me, because why do we want our kids to look up to somebody just because they can score a touchdown or, like, get the ball in the basket? Why wouldn't you want them to look up to the person who also knows themselves and cares about things that really matter? So it's kind of a twofold thing, because adults like to always say you shouldn't be like this person just because they play a sport, but then say that they should only play the sport. And it just kind of doesn't make sense. I know that's not something you want to steer on.
I'm going to say, that goes to the point. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
Like, when you even say it out loud, it doesn't make sense. So, like, why am I arguing
this?
I laughed at it, to be honest,
when
she said it, because, one, her words have no power over LeBron's life or anybody else's life. So, but what it does do, where the power in her words is that it gets all of us to get up in arms. And
we all got mad.
The conversation started talking about athletes' rights. And it's like, we have those rights. Nobody's taking them. There's not anything to even argue about. I try not to waste time on that.
Yeah, and you don't want to debate the rights and, like, lend credence to the fact that it's even a discussion.
That it's even debatable. It's not debatable.
No. You know what? I'm changing my outlook on this now. I was pissed on Twitter that day.
I mean, that is effective trolling.
Like, yeah.
That is what trolls on the internet do. They put out stuff out there to get everybody upset and argue, and then you go click on the profile and it's not even a real person.
Yeah. It's like the egg. Yeah.
It's just
but
like
okay,
the egg.
Did you always have this clarity on that, or did you through time say, I'm wasting my time caring about these types of things? When did that moment of clarity come for you?
To me, it was in 2016.
You
know, because there have been tons of, you know, you watch these videos of black people being killed by officers, just unarmed. And like, I get mad, vent on Twitter a little bit, hashtag and a new name.
Yeah.
And just continuously doing that. And after Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, was just like, I'm tired of doing that. Because it's not affecting anything.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, there'll be another name that I'll be hashtagging, another T-shirt.
Yeah.
It's like, how do I engage in being part of the solution and not waste my effort on anything in between that? And that kind of just started a journey for me to just stay focused on the outcomes. And luckily for me, you know, I'm in a profession where, and that's why I think athletes, this is why we'll talk about athletes, I think we have a significant voice in this realm, because everything that we do on a daily basis in our sport teaches us to stay focused, teaches us to block out distractions, to have to deal with media every single day, to have to work with other people, all toward one common goal. And that's all we focus on, is the win. No matter what's going on, we focus on the win. And so that's kind of the same approach I've taken to this, is that, okay, I need to be able to work with people on every side of this, these issues, and be able to always be goal-oriented and always be solution-minded. And everything outside of this, the people that want me to turn this way and argue with them, it's just a distraction.
And, you know, it just kind of off you saying that, in some ways, social activism like became a trend, more so than it did something that people cared about.
To an extent. I think at this point in time, like I said, time always reveals truth. Mm-hmm. And I think what you saw is that it did become trendy until there was like, okay, so what's your next step? Mm-hmm. Like, what's your action item? And then quickly that died back down. And most of it was reactions to what our president was saying. So all of a sudden you had a ton of players in the league now taking a knee. And then that disappeared within a week or so. So I think, yeah, it is cool to be an activist now, or to, you know, to get active, until you have to actually do something and you realize that it's a sacrifice, not only your time, but of like your heart. Like, you got to be into it and really, you know, be selfless, because it's a risk. Anytime you're trying to put out or make some kind of change, there's always going to be resistance. There's always going to be backlash, and you got to be prepared to take that on. If this is what you're serious about.
Yeah, and that is one thing I always think about, even with Colin Kaepernick. It's like his decision to do that led to what is could quite possibly be the end of his football career. Mm-hmm. And that is a very heavy thing to carry. And I hope that when people kind of look back on this, they realize, I guess, in a sense, what Colin sacrificed to be able to do what he believed in. Yeah. And I don't know if everybody really thinks about that when they think about the movement.
I mean, I think they do. I think people recognize the significance of what Colin's done, or what he started, and because it created, you know, a movement that then, even though, you know, like I said, I think it might have cost him his career, because I think there are teams that just flat out didn't sign him because of his political stance. But he started something that moved the bar, and so then you have other guys, myself, who's still in the league, and a bunch of other players who now need to continue to push the bar until they kick us out, and then the next generation moves it further and further. That's what a movement is, that it's not about one person. It's about really just a catalyst, which I think Colin Kaepernick was, but it's about the collective now getting active and getting mobile in order to really, you know, make something happen.
Who has inspired you? Growing up, who are the people that you look to?
My father was the first example that I had of really being selfless, and I got to witness him kind of be. I had both my parents are in the home. Parents been married for 30 years now, and I got to see him be a father figure to other kids in the neighborhood who didn't have dads. He would be the one out there showing us how to play football. He was signing kids up, you know, for Pop Warner, taking all of us to and from practice, and out of a 2-block radius, two of those kids made it to the NFL outside of me. So you had three kids that he, you know, he poured into that were able to kind of make it just through athletics, but a lot of them are doing other things as well. And so that was the first time I got to see that example. Then I had a high school coach who poured into me, got to college and played under Jim Tressel for 4 years. And he taught me probably 90% of what he taught me is off the field, you know, giving back to the community, community service, integrity, like, all of these things, you know, having even just like self-reflection. He used to make us meditate like for 15 minutes in training camp every day.
Do you still meditate?
A little bit.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah.
When I can get to it.
I write. That's how I get my thoughts out. I write. But he just had us, he used to call it quiet time. Just we come in 15 minutes, you reflect on something, you share with the group. But it just got you thinking the game is just a game. Like, life is so much bigger than what we do. And I think, you know, for me, that was a huge influence in my life. So I don't know, when I have those examples, like, it's, it's like I'm not the way I am by on accident.
Yeah, like I just think you were in such a place of peace. I'm like, I want to be this way.
I'm not like that. I wouldn't say peace. Peace is not the.
But you just seem very sure of your convictions, I don't think that most people are that way. You know, they probably believe it a lot, but you believe it fully.
Well, I think the more I learn about it, the more, because I didn't know what I was doing when I started, you know, and I told myself that, like, look, I don't know what I'm getting into, but I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
And I think the more and more I learned, the more that just validated that I'm in the right place. Like, doors are opening that I never knew would open, and I have a voice in all of these different areas. And so I don't know, even now, like, I understand the concept. I know what I'm doing, but, like, I'm still just kind of walking on faith. Like, all right, God, if you say walk in this door, I'll walk in and I'll talk what's on my heart. And, you know, hopefully it moves people. And to this point, I've been right where I need to be.
I'm curious. You said that you write when you want to kind of get things off your chest. How often do you write? What are you writing? Are we talking poetry, prose, essay?
I'll write, like, three, four paragraphs or something. Just when I got a lot going on in my mind and I just need to get it out. I just write it down how I'm feeling.
Very nice. Yeah. I had no idea that you do that. I did, though. I read your essay that I think it was Vice.
Yeah.
That was a very good essay. Written very well.
I appreciate it.
I'm into it. I was like, this guy, you honestly, I don't know if this is something you would want to do, but you could 100% get into media, like do journalism. But I feel like you're like, kind of off the media at the moment.
Yeah, right now. I feel like every athlete,
you're like, yes, you're right.
But it's nice. It's something that I in off season, I usually get around. I do some of the broadcast training and all of that. But my major was strategic communications in college. So it's something that I think naturally I can fit into. But I'm going to enjoy the space that I'm in right now first.
Yeah, you should chill for a little bit. By the way, Ohio State, I was at the Big Ten Network before I came here.
Okay.
Best campus.
Yep.
It's not even close.
It's not.
I love Clemson. And I know you're going back as an honorary captain, right?
Yep,
you and Ryan Shazier. Yep. How is he? Have you talked to him?
I haven't talked to him, but, you know, from everything I understand, he's in good spirits. I know he's talking about wanting to still make a comeback and be better than he was before the injury. So, you know, all of our thoughts and prayers are with him. Can't wait to see him when we get back in Columbus. I don't even know the team anymore because, like, I'm now.
Who all's on it?
Yeah, I'm like 10 years removed now, so. But it's going to be fun to get around those guys.
Okay, so I have to ask you, I meant to when I saw your get up. Have you actually seen Black Panther yet?
Twice.
How amazing is it?
It's awesome. So it's funny story is my daughter, I pick her up from school. Now I'm off season, I take her to and from school. And the teacher is like, hey, did you take Elle to see Black Panther? I'm like, yeah. She's like, yes, every black person sees she's walking around giving the salute. I'm like, hey, she's four, too. I'm like,
tell her to keep doing it.
Hey, every time I see her. But
no, that is amazing.
It's an awesome movie, man.
Yes.
Awesome.
Okay, Killmonger.
Mm-hmm.
Villain, victim, how do you see him?
That was the only problem I had with the movie, is that, because I honestly think that if I could vote for T'Challa or Killmonger for president, regardless of their, like, demeanor, just off of their philosophy, it would be Killmonger every time.
Yeah.
Because I think everything that he spoke of was truth. I didn't like that they painted being like, having like a militant or revolutionary mindset made you evil. Because he was just an evil character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's choking out the old lady and doing all kind of stuff. He didn't really love the people. But if he was somebody who had that same mindset, same philosophy, but actually cared about his people and wasn't choking old ladies on his spare time, like, you know, he would have been the star. So I actually think... if he wasn't evil, I wish he wasn't an evil character, but, you know, he wasn't as bad. He wasn't as crazy as people they made him to see.
I agree, because I didn't feel like, you know, I think what makes somebody a villain, you can have the right idea or the right intentions and still be a villain, but it's the way you go about it that makes you, like, the character of a villain.
Right.
And he just wasn't going about it the right way. The way that he wanted to do it was the same exact way that the oppressor does it.
Yeah.
But he, I think it was his movie. He stole the show.
No doubt.
It was so good. Okay, which character did your daughter love?
She likes Black Panther. That's who she. Yeah, yeah, that's her favorite one.
Like, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, T'Challa, I like him, but he wasn't my favorite.
I mean, you know, she's four, so yeah, she's not looking at like the plot twists
right.
and all that. But
I don't know if she's like Okoye or the sister who is like scientific.
Nah, she's like, because we went back and watched the Civil War, Marvel Civil War after that. To just get context, and as soon as the Black Panther came on, she's like, oh, T'Challa. I'm like,
I love that. Yeah. So, but even when you think about how amazing it is that she went to school and she saw this movie and she's doing that, like, that's the type of character she's seeing and looking up to. I can't.
Right.
What characters were you looking up to when you were younger? You didn't have something like T'Challa.
No, we were looking at Meteor Man and there's the other guy with the fork for glasses. I forget. But, yeah, it wasn't quite like that.
Yeah, like just the representation that they have now is just on a different level. It just makes me smile to know that you can look and see somebody that looks just like you.
Yeah.
And I also think it's amazing the way that you and your wife are. Just you guys are the most adorable couple I have ever seen. When you guys were on the red carpet and you did like the revolving.
Oh, yeah.
And like, see, your daughter is very lucky to be able to have that and see that. And I was actually talking to somebody about this today before we did the podcast. We are not able to see very good representations of Black love all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So for you guys to be able to do that and be so in love, it seems, is just amazing.
Yeah, I think anything is just, especially now, it's just like representation. And I think that's why the movie Black Panther was so powerful, especially like for us, is because we didn't have these kind of examples to live up to. We see plenty of like the bad, you know,
mm-hmm.
and obviously divorce is not necessarily pinned to us as Black people, but it's just always been tough to see those great examples. You'll have the one-offs, the Cosbys,
yeah.
and, you know,
right, no,
all these different
sure.
things, but it's just not a consistent mm-hmm. image that you get to portray. So I think it's important that you know, we celebrate it as much as we can. Not to say that it's easy or anything mm-hmm. like that, but you know, whenever you have, you know, a couple, especially a Black couple that are doing it, that have kids, that are, you know, that are a beautiful couple, you need to celebrate it. And, you know, that's not, I'm not even talking about me and my wife. I'm
yeah.
talking about, you know, everybody. It's been fun to see that trend starting to come up now where people are just celebrating their Blackness. They're celebrating
yes.
the fatherhood, you know, motherhood, just even, you know, I love the Black Panther, especially because how they depicted Black women in
yeah.
that, in that movie, just as, you know.
They were the warriors,
yeah,
the leaders.
They were everything, you know, they were his backbone and mm-hmm. Protecting him, you know, against everything, where when the dudes were kind of, you know, trying to split everything. But, I mean, it's fun right now. It's mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of people that are fighting to kind of own our culture,
mm-hmm.
and it's fun to be a part of it.
Okay, so I'm gonna kind of put you on the spot here. I know there are a lot of keys, but to you, what is the key to having like a sustainable relationship?
Whew. I think the key is expectations, and I think a lot of times we glorify, you know, what everything is supposed to be and what marriage is supposed to be. Like, we're going to just get married and then it's like the end, the sun sets and we're just off into bliss. But, you know, life is happening all the time. And if you're not ready to, if your expectations is to be one thing, but life is throwing you a different, sometimes it's tough to adjust. So if you're not flexible enough to, you know, communicate, to sacrifice, to stick with it, even when it's not fun, then it's going to be hard because, marriage is not easy. And it's one of the things, like for me, you know, I play ball all the time. I can run into a guy who's 300 pounds with no issue, but me and my wife going into it, like it'll ruin my day.
Yeah.
Like her getting, like I walk out of the house and she got an attitude, like the rest of my day is like,
done.
It's shot. And
yeah.
it's like, because, you know, when you're married, your spouse has that kind of effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's one of those things that it takes a lot of work, but, you know, it's also one of the most rewarding things you can do.
So sweet. On that note, we're going to go to Twitter questions before I get all sad. That's very beautiful. Alrighty, let's see what we've got. We actually have a lot. Okay. Alrighty. Sorry, my Twitter is like freezing these days. Okay, This actually works. I was just tweeting about this. How do you feel about the Lamar Jackson quarterback wide receiver situation?
I think it's unfortunate. You know, he's played quarterback at a crazy high level in college. And I've heard them try to compare it, like, well, other players, you know, like they'll take running backs and have them do wide receiver drills, but it's not the same as a quarterback. It really isn't. And Braxton Miller was a guy who was a quarterback, but he's changed to wide receiver in college.
Right.
So when he came out, he was a wide receiver. So I think it's unfortunate, and I think our black quarterbacks are definitely evaluated way harder than white quarterbacks.
And I think even black quarterbacks in the NFL have a much shorter leash than white quarterbacks.
No doubt. Yeah. Even once you make it, getting in is already tough. But even when you get in the league, your leash is short. But that's something that, you know, we'll continue to you know, encourage him to continue to embrace it. But we continue to put talent after talent in the league. So we got plenty to be proud about.
Alrighty. One word to describe Nick Foles' Super Bowl performance.
There's so many things I want to say. I'm like one word. You can't even describe that in one word. I mean, it was epic. That's what I was
saying. Epic? You go with epic? I like it.
For what our team needed, like for the city, just to like end the Cinderella story, it was epic.
What NFC East team is the most fun to beat? Come on, who is it?
I'm trying to think. I would say probably, honestly, I enjoy being all of them the same. I'm going to be completely honest. But we played Dallas like on Thanksgiving, a couple of like primetime games. Those are always sweet. If I had to pick one, it would be Dallas.
Dallas? Yeah. Okay. I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Oh, this one's good. Since Kobe said that winning an Oscar felt better than winning a championship, is there any award out there that you think would feel better than winning a Super Bowl?
Not that I would know of yet. Mm-hmm. Like, to get an award for something, you most times have to be kind of working at it. So right now, the only trophy I'm looking about is that.
Yeah.
I want that Lombardi. But, Now, there's been a lot of awards though that I've been proud of. Being nominated for Walter Payton Man of the Year this past year was a huge honor, and I didn't even win it. I was just nominated for it, and that was big. The Byron Wizard White Award is similar to that, but the NFLPA does that the year before that I won. That was a huge honor. But right now that Lombardi is
that's up there.
That's at the top right now.
I actually have a question. This isn't what anybody asked, but I want to hear more about just your relationship with Chris Long and kind of also what he meant to the team this season.
So I didn't actually know Chris before this year. He, I knew him kind of informally through some other guys. He was actually on that original kind of like conversation around the league in 2016 that we were talking about. And so I remember just even he was one of maybe like three white guys that actually engaged in that dialogue early on. And so when he got here, you know, we had a few conversations, but we just kind of automatically clicked. And that stuff happened in Charleston. And I could tell him being from there, like, it sparked something in him. But we didn't have any conversations about it, really. He just comes up to me before the game and just like, he's like, yeah, I wanna support you. And like, it's time for, you know, people to step up. He's like, I don't want to take the narrative. I don't want to steal whatever is happening, but he's like, I just want to put my arm around you. Is that cool? And I'm like, yeah, do what you got to do.
Great.
And I think the image that it showed completely changed the narrative for at least a little while to just show, because I think there was like this tension, not necessarily tension, but you can feel like white players, they ideologically agree with you, and they like, okay, yeah, like we need to change some things, and this, you're right, all of these things are wrong. But it's like, well, how do I support you if I don't necessarily want to take a knee or if I don't want to raise a fist? And it's like, you don't have to conform to who I am to support. It's just as simple as putting your arm around me and standing next to me. And And I think what that did was open the door for an easier conversation, at least in our locker room and around the league, and hopefully for, you know, people watching.
For sure. And, you know, I think that in some ways it is unfortunate that for some people they want to see, you know, a white player get behind it for before they decide to take it seriously.
Right.
But how important is it, you know, for white players to do those things?
I mean, it's huge. If you think about what we're trying to do, you're talking about changing entire systems in our country. Like, to do that, like, a lot of that is done through voting or the masses moving, right? We're a minority. We're only 13% of the population.
Yeah.
So even if every black person stood on the table and said, we want to change this, it won't get done without, like, white people, without everybody getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a responsibility from all of us, from person to person, American to American, to at least empathize with what we're all going through. Because every group has something, you know, whether it's, you know, poverty, that has nothing to do with your race, immigration, LGBTQ, like, all of this stuff, everybody's dealing with stuff. If you can't empathize with what somebody's going through, then, you know, you're playing not only them, but this country a disservice.
I think that's a great way to end. That was fantastic. You were fantastic. I am inspired. Well, my whole mindset to change now. But no, you were great.
I
have always been very inspired by the things that you do. I'm happy we were able to make this happen a year later.
Yeah.
But it's better because now you're Super Bowl champ with
Eagles.
It worked out.
Iron's hot right now.
I appreciate you.
No problem.
So lots of takeaways for me in this episode. For starters, it takes a really strong and convicted person to speak their mind, especially when backlash is just inevitable, and especially when it's on the biggest sports stage imaginable. But Malcolm is just completely unwavering in his thoughts on protesting and his overall beliefs, and that allows him to stay so focused on what he believes is the important part. Secondly, and I touched on this a bit, Malcolm faced a ton of backlash after the NFL presented the initiative. But nothing changes the fact that he protested and gives back to the community. But I think that everyone got so focused on one part of the issue that we ignored the whole, that we wanted change. And it isn't happening overnight, and there is so much more to do, but small steps are being taken. And there really is a scenario where everyone can be right. And my third takeaway, honestly, is that Malcolm needs his own podcast because he has so much to say and he is an extremely thoughtful person who will challenge the way you look at the world. And I think that he did that for me in this episode. So thank you for listening. Like, subscribe, and leave a review if you haven't yet. I'm Taylor Brooks. Talk to you soon.